This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 921. What's going on, everyone? This is David Green, your host of the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast, joined today by my good buddy, Rob Abasolo. Rob, have you been noticing the weather changing lately?
You never know what you're going to get in Houston, man. Sometimes it's 80, sometimes it's cold. Yesterday was 44, and like today it's like, I don't know, 70. So I'm just like, I don't know. Houston, pick one. Stay cold. It's too hot here. I hate it all. I hate the Houston weather. How about you, David?
It's been warm. It's been nice. It hasn't been raining, which is crazy because California never rains. But this winter, it's been dumping rain on us. But I finally got a little bit of sun yesterday. And you know what that means?
What?
Means it's spring break and summer vacations are right around the corner. And this is the pregame or the get ready time for our short-term rental operators.
Yep. And today we're going to be talking about how to optimize your short-term rentals for spring break and summer vacations. We're going to be bringing on Avery Carl, a beloved author of Bigger Pockets, who wrote the book on STRs, to have this discussion. So let's get into it.
Yeah, the Today Show is awesome. We give maybe more actionable advice than we've done on a podcast in years. So this is one you definitely want to listen to twice and take notes on. And if you love it, please go give us a good review wherever you listen to your podcast. Make sure you listen all the way to the end because Rob has a very unique and individual pronunciation of a very popular Hawaiian destination, and you don't want to miss it. Avery Carl, welcome back to the Bigger Pockets Podcast. Let's get into this thing.
All right.
Tell me a little bit about what you see coming for peak season in the short-term rental space.
So it's a pretty general question, but you know what we see, to be real about it, is we're going to see a lot of broken toilets, leaks, things that need to be fixed. So you really need to make sure that you have your boots on the ground and your vendors ready to go, because you don't really have time in short-term rental like you do in long-term rental to fix things. They have to be done pretty immediately because otherwise your guest's stay will be ruined. So that would be my general out-of-the-gate advice, is have all your vendors ready to go.
That's really good advice, actually. Rob, let me ask you a question here. Mm-hmm. We talked about things heating up in the short-term rental game, but markets are local and cyclical. They don't all heat up at the same time, right? What's your thoughts on when the hot market is for the short-term rental space and if there is one?
It kind of depends. I mean, it really depends on how you've built out your portfolio architecture, right? Because you could have beach houses where, you know, May through September, you're on fire, but you're kind of crickets for the rest of the year. And then you could have places that are ski towns that are on fire during the winter, but very slow for the rest of the year. So it kind of depends, because we have some properties where our occupancy is 40%, which most people would look at that and be like, whoa, it's a failing Airbnb. But that 40% of the year makes up 90% of the revenue. So I would say it probably depends. I've got a little bit of everything to where I'm not particularly hurting on any season throughout the year. I will say, though, with all that said, having a beach house is my least favorite type of short-term rental to have, because you are pretty much hurting like 9 months out of the year if you don't save appropriately.
Oh, that's my favorite kind, because you get a break in the off season. So, I mean, here in Florida, South Florida, like Miami area, their high season is in the wintertime, but it's like really, really, really extremely hot in the summer, obviously. But up here in the Panhandle, our season is the summer and we're off in the winter. But so we're like May through the end of October, and I enjoy the nice break on the beach houses that we get.
That's fair.
Yeah. But I mean, the mountain houses, you know, they keep rolling. Their occupancy rate is higher, but our comparable beach houses do make more money over the course of the year than the mountain ones do.
I think it also, this is obviously anecdotal, depends on when you buy the beach property. Like I tell people, look, you know, you could probably get a pretty decent sale on a beach property in October, November, December, but just know that for like 6 months after that, it's going to be crickets. So be prepared to pay that mortgage until those bookings start to roll in.
Yeah, 100%.
All right. So for today's show, we're just going to be assuming spring break is the hot season, because I think for the majority of markets in the country, that's probably where things are going to be heating up. People don't have kids in school. Weather's starting to get better. They're more likely to take vacation. So let's start with that, Avery. Operationally, are there any tips to get more bookings for spring break and summer vacation specifically?
Specifically, I would say, you know, just pricing and revenue management, just general good, healthy pricing and revenue management. So making sure that you're looking at your calendar every week or every day, even just to make sure that you generally don't see, and Rob, you may have a different experience than me. We see people in our beach properties book a little further in advance than our mountain properties. They book those about 5 weeks ahead of time. So if you're further than 5 weeks, I think it's a little too soon to be messing around with your prices too much. I like to keep the prices a little bit higher for further out dates because people who are booking further out, they probably have a specific reason that they're booking further out. And then as the time gets closer, drop them. And then if it's like tomorrow, I'll raise that rate pretty high because if somebody needs to book tomorrow, again, kind of like the far out dates, they need to do it. So they'll be willing to pay more. But in terms of those dates specifically, we like to make sure that our headlines state something about spring break, you know, 5, 6, 8 weeks before, and make sure that we're using our headline to kind of utilize all the amenities that we offer, whether we've got a private pool or deeded beach access or, you know, mountain view, things like that.
Okay, so you said a couple of things here that definitely, they pique my interest. And this is actually something that Jamie Lane, SVP at AirDNA, said when he was on the show to me and Tony. And it's that when it's like last minute, you should raise your prices and actually be more expensive. And me and Tony were like, wait, hold on. We're way too scared. Because it's a game of chicken, it feels like. You know, it's like, is someone going to actually book at the higher price? Or do you want to just get someone in and out? So is that typically what you're doing? Like last second, you drive up the price? Or does it depend on what season we're actually in?
Depends on the season, just like anything. Depends on the time of year. Like doing that in January at the beach is not going to get you anything.
Right. Yeah, totally.
If you're in the middle of the summer, like end of June, and maybe somebody cancels and you have a week next week that's not booked, I'm shooting those prices up because everybody else is booked at that point. So anybody who wants to plan a last minute trip, they're going to be willing to pay more. So I know that does sound scary, but I agree.
It does. Yeah. No, it's fair. No, it's a good theory too, especially if you have a quality listing and you are pretty, you know, comparable to the people around you. The other thing you mentioned that I actually think is a pretty good tip, I don't want to glaze over this. You mentioned that when we're starting to approach this spring break season, you kind of change your title to be spring break-ish or in your headlines. Do you mean like the actual title on Airbnb or Vrbo, like where it says like beautiful chalet 20 minutes from downtown?
Yeah, like open for spring break, spring break dates available. And we kind of rotate every Monday we rotate our headlines and to kind of, you know, tickle that algorithm it tends to like when you mess with your listing. So we change those every week.
I've noticed in general, the more passive we try to make things, the less algorithms like it. It seems to be when you change the pictures, you change the copy, you just tweak things a little bit, it sends a message to the way algorithms are designed right now that this is better. It's being upgraded. And that's just a good lesson for everybody who's listening who thinks, I'm going to buy real estate and I'm going to throw it up somewhere and I'm never going to work again. And I'm just going to be sitting on the beach with my computer at home. No, you're not going to be working the same, but you're going to have to do something. And that makes sense that you would just tweak it in little ways and get your way back to the top. Is there anything else that you find operators are doing to increase bookings as of late?
Amenities, always important. I think, and then updating your pictures. So just changing your pictures around, getting new ones. If you update any furniture, making sure you get new pictures. In mountain markets, especially, I like to make sure we have pictures for each season. So in the fall, the leaves are really, really pretty and crazy looking. So we like to rotate that in. In the summertime, it's really, really green. So we like to rotate that. And then, of course, if it ever snows, which isn't often, we like to try and have some snow pictures as well. If we're coming up on Christmas, which can be a high season in some markets, our beach markets, no, our mountain markets, yes, we'll rotate the photos to have like Christmas decor in there because a lot of the guests will ask, hey, are you guys going to have a Christmas tree if we're spending the holidays? I know not everybody celebrates Christmas, but a lot of our guests do ask about that.
Seasonal photos are really big for sure. And they're always the worst photos in someone's album because they typically take them on their cell phones and they don't want to hire the photographer to come back out. But every Christmas tree photo I ever see in the Smokies is like taken at like 10 p.m. when it's like super dark. But I'm like, yeah, you know, I think it really does work because the amount of guests that ask if the place is going to be decorated, pretty high. And I think that's really important. And I think that's probably something like just in the Smoky Mountains, for example, you could probably start marketing that. What would you say, like October, November for the Christmas time?
Yeah, I'd say October.
Cool. Yeah.
So high level overview, at what point are you mostly changing photos? Is it like several times during the year or are you thinking every month or two?
If it's seasonal photos, I would do it maybe a month or two out. If it's just general listing maintenance, I might do it. I would check every other week and look at what your bookings look like. And if you're kind of slow, it might be time to change some things around. If not, just let it run.
Rob, do you have a system of like you regularly change photos at certain times of the year?
I don't. Well, if I have a seasonal photo, I don't really have that many seasonal photos in a lot of my places. But when I do, I'll move them around. But man, I spend so much time scrutinizing my top five on Airbnb that like it is a whole, it's not like I don't just sit there and pick the order in 2 minutes. It's kind of like I do it. I look on my phone. I look on my computer. I send it to friends. I'm like, what do you think? So it's a really big thing. So it's very stressful for me to change it out. But I will say from an algorithmic standpoint, there have been many times where I've uploaded new photos and immediately saw a boost in revenue. Now you can say the new photos help me do that, or Airbnb notices whenever you're going in and actually changing up your listing. So I definitely am an advocate of moving sort of like the back 90% of your photos around. I just spend so much time curating those top five that I don't typically move those around unless I've got better photos to show off the space.
And on that note, I would say don't, especially what I see around here in the beach market, is people's front photo being a picture of the beach. I think that's a complete waste of advertisement, because everybody knows that's going to book your place or book anywhere at the beach knows they're booking at the beach. They don't need to see a picture of the beach. They want to see a picture of your house. So if I'm scrolling, I'm not going to click on a picture of the beach because I know it's there. I'm going to the beach.
Let me ask you this, because I completely agree with that. And they're always like, I don't know, just cheesy beach photos that are obviously from Google. But my thought is, if you can see the beach from your house and there's a view at your house, you should show that. What do you think about that?
Yes, I want to be able to see something in the photo that lets me know that this is the view from the house. Like maybe you can see a little bit of the railing in it. Or what I do like to see, if we're talking about beach photos, is an aerial shot, like a drone photo with the house circled, like, or a square of red or a star over the house or something showing you where the house is, and a little line that shows you how to get to the beach and shows you that it's really close. So that I do like, but I don't like just generic beach photos, because if you're booking, or really anywhere, like generic view photos, if it's not from the porch of the house, I think that's a waste of the front picture.
Yeah, and a little misleading too. I was actually just comping out, what was it? Waikiki in Hawaii, and every listing showed all these photos of the beach, and it's like, oh man, that's cool. And then you actually click around and it's like in the middle of the building, no view, your view is of another building. And I was like, man, I'd be really mad if I booked this place. So yeah, you also want to make sure that you're actually painting an accurate representation of what your place is.
Yeah.
Do you know who else is going to be really mad? Everybody that lives in Hawaii that heard you say Waikiki instead of Waikiki. Is it possible you've gone your whole life and never heard that word pronounced out loud?
Well, first of all, that you passed the test, because the whole point of that was to see how knowledgeable you are about the area. And David, you're officially the hero. This is me throwing you a softball in the Bigger Pockets podcast. So you're welcome, actually.
I appreciate that. My ego does need the random stroking where I get to come in and I get to mansplain how you're supposed to say Waikiki. Thank you for that.
Okay, so now we know how to pronounce Waikiki and how to get an edge on the algorithm. But what else can you do to maximize bookings? We'll get into descriptions, amenities, and more right after the break. What's better than low money down? No money down. Now through Rent to Retirement, you can buy a brand new construction turnkey rental property for no money down. Wait, hold on. This can't be right. I need to double check with Zach, Rent to Retirement CEO.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Zach, how the heck are you selling turnkey rental properties for $0 down?
It's not that complicated, Rob. Rent to Retirement has new construction properties up to $20,000 below retail prices. We also have investor loans with rates as low as 3.99% and down payment options as low as 5% or sometimes even zero money down. You get all the cash flow, appreciation, and equity for as little as zero money down. That's an infinite return.
Hold on, wait. Let me get on this before we tell it to the whole Bigger Pockets audience.
Just head to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com, or text REI to 33777. That's REI to 33777 to learn more about how you can get started investing with no money down today.
Get your next new construction property at a steep discount or invest with no money down. Head to renttoretirement.com today. Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today. You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from ConnectInvest. ConnectInvest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. connectinvest.com/VP. Welcome back, investors. We're here with short-term rental expert Avery Carl, and she's breaking down exactly what to do to make the most money on your short-term rentals this vacation season. Let's get back into it.
All right, Avery, coming back to you. During peak seasons, when everything is like there's so much money to be made, are you adjusting your minimum and maximum stay requirements?
Again, super dependent on the market. So in some areas where I own things, you're looking at like a 3 to 5 night stay on average. And then again, back to the beach properties. I hate to make this whole thing about beach properties, but you really see in the high season more of a Saturday to Saturday booking time. So it just depends on the market, and you have to adjust your minimum night stay regardless. So, you know, if you, again, back to the tweaking of the listings, if you see that you're not, your bookings aren't rolling in the way they have been and the season suggests that it should be faster than it is. Like, I don't like to hear people say, oh, it's January 3rd and I'm not getting any bookings. Why? Well, it's January 3rd. Everybody was just on vacation. But if you're in season and you're looking slow, then it can help you to jump back up in the search results if you lower your minimum night stay temporarily to like 1 day, lower your price temporarily super low to jump back up, and then you can, you know, readjust accordingly. So I think that it really just depends on the market. I don't like to typically have less than a 2-night minimum night stay, but again, I'm not going to have that in Destin in the middle of the summer. It's going to be more like a 5-night minimum.
I'm with that too. I think and I think this actually applies to most of the markets that are vacation markets. I call them vacation destinations, right? So beach towns, ski towns, mountain towns, all that stuff. But I do get a little like, I feel like it's such a game. It's a pricing levers game, especially for, let's say, beaches or like a ski town where, you know, you might be going up in the mountains or whatever, where typically the way I'm setting up my prices is if someone is going to book my place 90 days in advance, typically those people are planners. They're planning for an entire group of people. They've got the sort of the consent or the buy-off of the group to go and make that decision. And they will pay more for that property because they want to secure the best property. And so if you're booking my place 90 days in advance, I have a 5-day minimum. But where it gets really hard in some of these kind of vacation destinations is lowering it to a 2 or 3-day minimum. And then if those people book, let's say Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I always feel like I'm missing out on the people that would have booked like Monday through Friday or something like that. So I think it really is market dependent, but typically I'm finding like I'm not dropping my minimums until usually like we're entering the month of that specific property.
And around holidays too. So, you know, 4th of July, I want to see a higher, I'm not going to let somebody book 2 nights over the 4th of July because somebody will book that for more. I mean, then that has backfired on me before, if we want to be real. I have raised the price, waited for a longer booking at one of my houses, and I ended up staying there myself because nobody happened to book it for 4th of July. So you can screw that up, just so you guys know.
Totally. It's one of those things where pricing is perhaps the least automated aspect of any short-term rental. And I'm a big believer that pricing is something you should be jumping in a couple times a week to really deflect or to kind of move things around, because you will lose sight of it. And then you'll be like, huh, why did someone book my place a year from now? And then you're like, dang it, it's South by Southwest Austin. What was I thinking? So that is something that I think most people drop the ball on. But that would be the tip. If you're in a really seasonal market, make sure you're in Price Labs, Wheelhouse, wherever you're at, a couple times a week.
All right. That was about pictures. Now let's move into descriptions briefly, each of you. Avery, what are some things that you like to make sure you add in descriptions to help increase bookings and revenue?
I like to see some white space in a description. So what I mean by that is not a full paragraph with no spaces. We call them boom booms, really they're bullet points. I want to see some bullet points of exactly how far you are from the destinations, whether it's, you know, attractions, the beach, the mountains, the national park, whatever that is. I want to see, you know, just all the details of the main things that a guest would want to know right there in it. I want to see a very descriptive headline. Everybody names their properties, right? We all do. It makes it easier to, when you have multiple, to know which properties you're talking about. When you say like, oh, Crazy Train instead of 123 Main Street. So I don't want to see the name in the headline because you're wasting good real estate where you can be descriptive. The guest wants to know about amenities and location. They don't really care about what the cute name of the property is.
That's a great point. And it's easy to get caught up in your own head and like, well, we love this property. This is our Crazy Train. Our blood, sweat, and tears went into it. It's our baby. So everyone else is going to love it as much as we do. But the guest, like you said, doesn't care about that at all. They're just comparing this to all their other options. And they're wondering, what's the best bang I can get for my buck? Rob, what say you?
I'm not a fan unless there's just like a true brand behind your property to put the name of your property in the actual description. I think that's the most precious real estate on your listing. But as far as like descriptions, I'm with you, Avery. I really hate paragraphs. I think every paragraph on Airbnb, Vrbo, booking.com, whatever you choose, should be 2-3 sentences max and break it up. And especially in that very first section, it's like the kind of first general section. You really only have, I want to say 500 characters. That should never be a paragraph. That should only be the bullet points of the 10-15 best things around your property. And then the next section is what we call the about the space section. And that's where we get into these 2-3 sentence paragraphs. And really what I'm trying to do is like take people, if they could close their eyes and you could read this to them, you're kind of taking them through the house so they can imagine what the property is like, what the layout is like. And that's where I get more descriptive. But even then, I don't want a whole book in there. I would rather have a listing be overwritten than underwritten. Oftentimes people are like, hey, I'm not booking. Something's happening with my listing. What's going on? I pop into their description and see that they have two sentences total. That is the worst thing you can do for your listing. So I definitely think you want to spend some time like really crafting the story of your place. And if you're not a good writer, that's okay. I actually have used ChatGPT to kind of start it out and add some kind of more color to it and everything like that. So I think there are a lot of tools out there and services that can help you fill it out. But definitely try to use bullet points for that introductory section of copy.
And another thing that I would add to that, and maybe I'm a little oversensitive to this, as David might be too, being real estate agents, is getting too crazy with using too many adjectives to try and sound like you're like the best writer in the world. You want it to be good and tell a story, but I mean, I can't look at listings sometimes because sometimes real estate agents, like, they will capitalize every single word or do something or have way too many adjectives.
Location, location, location. Run, don't walk.
This quaint, charming cottage located in the highly desirable district of whatever boasts of four spacious bedrooms.
A nice, airy, open concept.
So let's try this. I'd like to get an example of a well-written listing description and a poor one.
Oh, goodness.
So here, let's just read the best Airbnb description ever. Okay, so it says, welcome to the Pink Pickle, Austin's most iconic girls' trip home. Every space has been thoughtfully curated to ensure selfies can be taken, mimosas can be had, and brides can be celebrated. Whether your group is looking to throw a bachelorette party or you're just wanting to take a girls' trip to get away from the male population, we've got you covered. Highlights about this home: 15 minutes from downtown, a get-ready vanity station, pickleball court, pool and deck, and then the last bullet point is literally everything is pink. And scene.
All right, Avery, how about you? Do you have an example of a listing description you think sounds good that our listeners can hear from?
Yeah, so this one is from a mountain property, and it kind of goes straight into the bullet points of everything that you would need about the property. So this, again, mountain market, so 1 acre lot, so people know they have privacy, high-speed Wi-Fi, which is a big consideration in mountain markets because sometimes the Wi-Fi is not good, 3 miles to the city center, hot tub, view, multi-cade games. All of these are organized really, really nicely into bullet points. So if I have kids, I can see, oh, cool, multi-cade games. 2 king beds, super important because there's nobody that is more disappointed than me when I show up to queen beds. My husband is 6'5", I'm 5'7". We don't have room for that. We got to have king. And this property has more reviews on Airbnb than any other 2-bedroom in the county. That's a little, you know, establishing a little cred there. Yeah, and one other thing that I think is cool about this one is it says, note, there is construction in the area, in the neighborhood, which will likely continue for the duration of the summer. So I think it's really important to make sure that if there are things that a guest could be negatively surprised by like that, you want to make sure they know that up front, because that will be reflected in your reviews, and you want to make sure they have the best time possible. So if you got anything like that, make sure to call it out right up front in the public-facing listing.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
All right, Rob, what's an example of a terrible listing description?
I'm not going to say terrible, but we talked about the bullet points, right? This one is, this listing description is literally just bullet points. It says kitchen, rice cooker, microwave, cooking utensils, coffee maker, kettle, knives, toaster, bedroom, king-size bed, brand new AC, entry door, room amenities, fresh linen, brand new Mitsubishi AC mini split, hair dryer. That's it. It's literally just lists every single possible amenity, but doesn't actually talk about anything.
Yeah, they just described a house is what they did. Windows, drywall.
Yeah, that's literally what they did. Like, this is an area where you can sleep. But I mean, I guess you would know what you're getting. You know, you wouldn't be like, does this have this amenity? You could probably just like look very quickly.
Okay, moving on here. Are you guys noticing that guests are expecting different amenities or things than they were in previous years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So back in the day, I will say this. I do miss the old days. I was actually just telling someone that like I am the least harsh judge of Airbnbs, which I know is probably surprising, but I would say 90% of the Airbnbs I'd stay at are awful. And I don't ever say, I mean, I'll let the host know in private feedback, but I'm always just like, whatever, like it's cheap. It's whatever, it fits the purpose. And I actually kind of remember back in the day, like Airbnb sort of was like that, where it's like you booked the place and you were meeting the host and it was all like friendly. And I feel like over the years, we've come to like have this expectation of being like the W, you know, very luxury experience and everything like that. So I do feel like nowadays in the Airbnb space, so many people complain about the world of hotels versus Airbnb and how Airbnb is more expensive now. So to really kind of ease the general population, I do think you sort of need to overcompensate with an Airbnb as to not upset people that are mad that Airbnbs are more expensive than hotels, when in all actuality, they should be, but I feel like there is a higher expectation these days.
Awesome. Avery, what are you noticing?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Whereas it used to be more of a personal thing, it's now more of a professionalized, people want to feel like they're staying in a professionalized business or dealing with a professionalized business and not just like Aunt Betty renting out her beach house when she's not there and the pictures are terrible. And, you know, she's like, oh, you know, don't open that one cabinet. That's my liquor cabinet. I did stay in an Airbnb last year where there was a drawer in the refrigerator of all of their condiments that you were not supposed to touch. It just felt really weird. I don't want to feel like people have been there before.
Hey, this house is yours. Listen, mi casa, su casa, but one quick thing. If you touch my ketchup, I will end you.
All right, time for one last quick break, but stay with us because Avery's tips on how short-term rental operators can set themselves apart and avoid damage from parties is coming up right after this.
Want to dive deep into commercial real estate, entrepreneurship, leadership, and the economy? Tune into the Walker Webcast, hosted by the CEO of Walker & Dunlop, one of the largest commercial real estate finance and advisory services firms in the nation. As an unparalleled leader in commercial real estate, CEO Willie Walker frequently appears as an expert on major platforms like CNBC and the New York Times. He's even been on the Bigger Pockets podcast network, too. On the Walker Webcast, you'll hear from guests like A-Rod, renowned economist Dr. Peter Linneman, and experts from Walker & Dunlop's capital markets, research, and investment sales groups. So fire up the Walker Webcast on your favorite podcast app or join live on Wednesdays to see Willie interact with his guests. Plus, you can always catch the replay on demand afterward. Stay ahead of the curve with insights for life from the Walker Webcast. Learn more and subscribe to the Walker Webcast at walkerdunlop.com/pockets. And be sure to follow Walker & Dunlop on all your favorite social media channels too. That's walkerdunlop.com/pockets. Take a second and imagine this. Immediate cash flow, above average rent, built-in equity, and a foolproof exit plan. No, it's not 2012 again. This is just what it's like to invest with Integra Development Group. They've simplified the real estate investing process so everyone can invest. With their new construction single-family rent-to-own homes, you'll get aggressively priced, brand-new properties that have tenants in place now in one of the fastest-growing states in America, Florida. Here's how IDG's rent-to-own strategy works. You get exclusive access to inventory with aggressive pricing thanks to IDG's builder-partner relationships. Then, invest and collect immediate cash flow with tenants already in place at or very close to closing. With the demand for new builds, your tenants pay above market rent, so you rake in more cash flow. And you'll get built-in equity and appreciation with an already agreed-to purchase price at year three, helping the tenants become homeowners while you build wealth. That's investing simplified. So secure your next investment property today with Integra Development Group at IntegraDG.com. That's IntegraDG.com to start investing today. You've heard us talk about it before. High interest rates are crushing real estate investors, leaving even some of the best investors in need of funding now. But with today's liquidity crisis, who can fill the demand? With Fundrise, America's largest direct-to-investor alternative asset manager, you have the opportunity to. Fundrise's new opportunistic private credit strategy was designed specifically for this new market environment. Fundrise supplies high-demand bridge financing on high-quality assets with credit-worthy borrowers. Top real estate investors get the funding they need while you walk away getting paid a healthy interest rate. To date, Fundrise has completed more than $500 million worth of private credit deals with an average net interest of 10.8%, and they've already amassed a pipeline worth more than $300 million. Don't sit on the sidelines. You can take advantage of this unique window of opportunity while it lasts with Fundrise's new private credit strategy. Ready to start? Go to fundrise.com/pockets to learn more. That's FUNDRISE.com/pockets. This is a paid endorsement for Fundrise. Past performance is not indicative of future results. All investments can lead to loss. As home prices and interest rates continue to rise and inventory levels dip, it's getting harder to find quality flips and wholesale deals. When there's not enough on-market inventory to go around, it's time to start looking off-market. Lucky for you, there are millions of homeowners nationwide who own a property they need to get off their hands. I got two words for you, my friend. PropStream it. PropStream is the leading real estate data provider and recognized as a Tech 100 honoree by Housing Wire for the fourth consecutive year. With PropStream, you can search over 155 million properties nationwide using 120-plus search filters like pre-foreclosure, bankruptcy, pre-probate, failed listings, and more to help you find motivated sellers in seconds. PropStream offers both public record data and an MLS sales estimate that's over 99% accurate to help you get the most accurate comps even in non-disclosure states. PropStream also provides lead automation, skip tracing, and a marketing suite with emails, postcards, and custom landing pages to close more deals efficiently. Get started today with their 7-day free trial and get 50 leads for free. Head on over to www.propstream.com/BP. That's www.propstream.com/BP. Welcome back, everyone. We're here with short-term rental owner and expert and friend Avery Carl. Let's pick up where we left off.
What tips do you have for operators who are really trying to set themselves apart? We say things all the time like amenities, but maybe can we be more specific? What are some low-hanging fruit that an operator can add in a property that's an amenity? Like it used to be the hot tub. Well, do we still get the same ROI in a hot tub, or is a hot tub expected and now you got to go a little overboard with something else? What are some pro tips you two can share?
I think the ROI is still the same. I was actually just talking to Avery right before this, telling her about that treehouse deck hot tub situation that I built at my property out in Sevierville, Gatlinburg, basically. And I think that that property is going to do $15,000 to $20,000 more in revenue as a result. So I definitely think at the bare minimum, you sort of need to, I mean, in my opinion, I think you kind of need to at least check the boxes that your surrounding comps are checking if you want to make as much as them, right? If you're down to settle and make a little less, you know, you don't have to spend $8,000 on a hot tub, but I do think it is one of the lower hanging fruits. Although I understand that's a really expensive amenity that you can just, you know, that's not really feasible for everybody. But I think, you know, going like the basics could be welcome baskets. It could be board games. It could be TVs in every room. It could also be, I mean, I think the greatest investment you can make in any of your properties is professional photography. And that's not necessarily amenity related. It just showcases your property the best. I would say those are all pretty low hanging fruit. What do you think, Avery?
The easiest and lowest hanging fruit of all to improve your reviews, which is also, you know, something that providing something that people have come to expect, is good customer service. I think a lot of people who want to get into short-term rentals, the ones who have experience, like if you even just waited tables in college for 6 months, you are going to have an easier time giving good customer service than somebody who is, no offense to my engineer friends out there, who, you know, has been an engineer for 20 years. The customer service is really an easy and free thing to do that will really elevate the experience for your guests, that will show up in your reviews. And also, you know, your guests have been, they've saved up all year to go on this vacation. They deserve to have a good time and to get good customer service from you. So I think that's the easiest one.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
What about something like a mural wall, or what Rob often refers to as these Instagrammable spaces? Are you guys seeing that that's gimmicky, or is that actually working?
It depends on the guest. So, Aaron, it depends on the market. So what I've seen, I have listed on the real estate sales side a few properties that have murals. And when the people who have said, when I've asked for feedback, hey, why aren't you buying this? And they're like, well, you know, I just want it to be like nice and upscale. And the mural is kind of like not that. And I'm like, well, you can paint it. So it kind of just, it depends on who you're targeting as your guests. If you're targeting, let's say, bachelorette parties, like Rob, yes, 100%, absolutely. If you're targeting, like here on 30A, a lot of times it's affluent or wanting to be affluent people from the Southeast. They kind of don't want the mural thing. They want it to feel very, very expensive and nice and luxury, which luxury is such a subjective term anyway. I hate to use it, but it just depends on who you're targeting as your guest in terms of the mural walls.
Yeah, I think there's a really fine line between cool mural and horrible mural. And I think most murals tend to be more on the bad side than the good side. I was actually just talking to, so I just had a mural painted at one of my properties in College Station. And I was talking to the muralist that was doing it. Her name's Bella. Very, very good. She's been actually painting a lot of murals for me. And basically, what we sort of agreed on was that murals are really cool, but if you're just throwing a mural in a house and you haven't really designed the experience, or you haven't really curated kind of like a vibe, if you will, David, you know, my favorite word, then a mural's kind of like, eh. Like if I threw a mural in my Gatlinburg property, it would be kind of like, okay, there's a wall with like Gatlinburg words on there, I guess. But it doesn't really add anything to the experience. Whereas if you have like an outdoor, like a backyard with a pickleball court and a pool table and a ping pong table, and it's like, you know, a cowboy tub, and it actually is a really photographable, photographic space, I can do this, then I think that's when a mural makes sense. But I just think a lot of people say, oh, I'm going to spend $2,000 on a mural in my living room and I should make more money. And it's like, eh, it's kind of cheesy if you don't go all out most of the time, is my thought.
What about the dreaded Airbnb party? Many an aspiring investor has seen their investment tanked due to crazy parties that destroy the property, angry neighbors. This is the new broken toilet of the short-term rental industry.
It's way worse.
Yeah. What can STR operators do to protect themselves from the crazy summer vacation or spring break party?
How many parties have you had, Avery? Have you had bad luck in that world?
In 9 years of investing in short-term rentals and 8 properties, I have never had one single party.
Nice. That's pretty good. I have not had any bad parties. I mean, I've had maybe like 2 times that a cleaner has been like, wow, they really roughed it up in here, but nothing like Project X, I think that's the name of the movie, right? Yeah, I've never had any catastrophic parties. I have some pretty scary rules in my property description. They're ridiculous. They're like, if you don't take off your shoes, I charge $10 per stain on my carpet, and if you lose my key, I'll charge you $200. And none of it is like enforceable, but I do think it tends to scare away that crowd. Why do you think you've been so successful or lucky in that world?
So we don't have rules to that extent, but we are very clear on the public-facing listing in our first few messages when a guest wants to book that we do not allow parties of any kind. We don't allow extra people. That typically kind of tips it in that direction too, of like, hey, we don't allow extra people. If they show up with a couple extra people, like, who cares? But if you tell them that, then they think twice about it and they're like, oh, you know what? This guy's paying attention. I don't really want to go down this road, so I'm just going to book something else. So I think that we do a good job of deterring that by, like you said, scary rules. A
couple other little tips that I do here. It's kind of funny because I am a little overboard, but it has worked for the most part. And it's funny because people will send a message and they'll say, hey, it's my dad's birthday, and we're just like, we're booking this to hang out at your house for his birthday. Is that okay? I know you said no parties. I'm like, yeah, that's totally fine. I mean, more like college parties. But for instant book on Airbnb specifically, people have to have a government issued ID on profile, and they have to have a previous recommendation from a short-term rental host. Those are the only ways that you can book my place instantly. And I have found that that's actually been pretty helpful too. Now I can't vet every single guest to that extent, but typically whenever we get some of those non-instant book inquiries, we also look at the reviews. And typically, you know, if it's not a 5-star review, it's like a 4.5 oftentimes. And so I'll go in and read the reviews and see, you know, if they have a 4.5, that means they got a 3 or a 4 previously. And I'll just go and read all the recent reviews and see if any host has kind of used the secret code language, like, Avery was a decent guest. I hadn't met her and she didn't leave it the way I had hoped, but I'm sure she's a nice person. It's always like worded like that from other guests or from other hosts that I'm like, okay, that's code for this person partied in my house. I'm not going to let them, you know, ever stay at my property again. And so I'll decline those pretty often.
Luke doesn't use code when he reviews guests. He just says, I do not recommend this guest.
Yeah, I should honestly, like, I think hosts could be a little bit more probably forward about it. But I also hate when guests, you know, do it when they're unreasonable on the other end. So I try to be diplomatic.
Last question. Did either of you have to remove any cameras with the new Airbnb policies in place?
Oh, no, I had a reel that I released on this topic a couple of days ago, but no.
Did you really?
I did. Did you, Avery?
Yeah, I had to take all those shower cameras out. That was unfortunate.
I know. But those were expensive.
Especially the waterproof ones. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't believe that was something that happened enough times that it had to become a rule. Like, who does that?
I genuinely didn't think it was a rule. Like, I had a student that was like, hey, I've got a camera in my hallway. Like, should I let them know? And I'm like, you can't have that in there. And he's like, no, you can. And I was like, no, you can't, dude. It's inside of a house. That's weird. He's like, trust me. And he looked it up in front of me and I was like, okay, well, take it out. It's weird. You should never have indoor cameras.
And you know what's worse is the people who are commenting on social media about why you should be able to have it. So like I commented on Bigger Pockets' Instagram post about it. And I was like, man, that's crazy. I didn't even know this had to be a thing. And I got so much heat from people who were like, it is their property and they need to protect it. And that is why they need cameras inside the house. And I'm like, okay, guys, I'm going to let you win this one. I'm just not going to.
Yeah, I know. It's fun to read the comments, but I'm just like, guys, come on. It's weird. I don't, there is no argument for how it could be the other way around. So
you guys don't need to be investing in real estate if you need a camera inside the house.
I don't even check the doorbell camera. So that just causes enough problems if you were checking your Ring every single day.
All right. Thanks, both of you, for joining me. The short-term rental space is fascinating as we are seeing real estate investing moving further and further away from being passive and more into being an active business, which if you want to stay ahead of the game, you want to stay ahead of the curve, and you want to stay competitive, you got to embrace it. And we are here for you at Bigger Pockets to bring you all of the latest trends, techniques, tips, and strategies to do just that. If you want to know more about Avery, Rob, or I, you can find our information in the show notes. And don't forget to leave us a review wherever you listen. Listen to your podcast. They help us a ton. Thanks to both of you. This is David Green for Rob Wakiki Abasolo signing off.
Oh boy. I was just kidding, everybody. It was a joke. There's a reason small multifamily investing is so popular in the Bigger Pockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage every month, 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value, 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies that you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property that you can actually afford? Which market and which deals are best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling, and living your life without being tied down to 4 leaky toilets or 4 fussy tenants? All great questions, my friends. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Leka Devatha. So if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/4, F-O-U-R, today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. See you there.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.